Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us here in the Great Wide World, brought together by the internet. Last Three Guys Do a Podcast are back for our pre-Super Bowl edition. John Morgo, again joined by Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown, as again, we figured this was going to be the matchup in the big game in Miami next week, the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs, and sure enough, that's what we got. 49ers wasted little time disposing of the Green Bay Packers. That game started when we were taping last week. Again, it is over. San Francisco, Kansas City should be a good matchup. So we do have a guest calling in to talk about this matchup in a little bit. We'll talk about with him when he does call in. But let's just open it up for comments now about this particular matchup between the Chiefs and the Niners. We kind of went into it a little bit last week. But really what I want to focus on now, guys, is we all know about Patrick Mahomes, what he brings to the table, but this is really Jimmy Garoppolo's, his introduction to the big stage. Could this be a time when the Chiefs have the advantage in terms of the experience factor? Because basically, the Niners, this is their first time on the grand stage, as it were. The nerves might be working against them, I think.
I mean, in my opinion, the Chiefs are very pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the pretty pick. You know, great offense. You know, you got, you know, spearheaded by Patrick Mahomes. You know, we're talking about former MVP, set a milestone this year. If he completes the Super Bowl run, you know. But I'm of the opinion, and I like the Chiefs. You know, even though they are not my team, but they are from the division that my team is in, AFC West.
Right.
I was just, you know, from my years of playing sports and watching sports, you know, great offense will score some points.
Yes.
You might win. But with defense, I could prevent you from scoring your points. I will win. And when I look at the 49ers, they represent your blue collar, mm-hmm. bring lunch pail to work, punch you in the face defense that could possibly win a championship. And that's going to be my pick going into next Sunday. I believe that the 49ers will prevail. I believe that better defense will win the day.
That's an interesting point, Leon, about the defense, and I have to agree with you. I think the Niners do have the better defense than the Kansas City Chiefs. I think Bosa is one of their better is a definite good sack man. He's got to get through the line. He's got to get to Patrick Mahomes and bring him down, or at least make him uncomfortable, throw the timing off in his routes when he tries to hit with Travis Kelce. Daniel, what's your opinion on this?
You know, guys, I don't think we've ever seen a Super Bowl quite like this. And what I mean is, I don't think we've ever seen a Super Bowl where your head and your heart is going to be hard, tough to decide and decipher between your head and your heart, because heart-wise, you want for both teams to win. They're both great stories. San Francisco, and look what Kyle Shanahan's done. He is trying to erase 2016, and when he was offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. And what better way to do it is to lead this team to a Super Bowl victory, which is the 49ers. They have been a success story. We knew that they was going to get to a point where they could be contenders, because Jimmy Garoppolo definitely showed us that he could be a capable quarterback of doing that. And then you have the Kansas City Chiefs, and there's one name that just stands out when you talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's Andy Reid. And yep. I'm going to ask John Fricky, I'm going to ask our guest once he comes on about that, you know. So while I see that you guys the obvious pick would be to go with San Francisco, because they run the football and they play great defense. Mm-hmm. Their defense has been in the top five all season long. And that is well documented. That is great. That is just an outstanding they've just been outstanding. And Robert Saleh, for him not to have a coaching job I think that was his decision.
Okay.
I think he still wanted to stick with San Francisco. But, man, he came out as one of the red-hot coordinators to have a coaching job. You know, he did get interviewed. I'm going to shock a lot of people, and I'm going to go against you two.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs, and here's why. I just think that if there's a game, I think what people are fearing is that we're going to have a game like we did last year. Yeah. A lot of people did not like the low-scoring affair.
No, they didn't. I disagree with that. I think as long as the game is close.
I do too.
As long as the game is close, right. You got a great game. As long as you go into the final 2 minutes with both teams having a shot, I think that's great.
Right.
I think the one thing we don't want to see is a rout, a runaway, where the thing is over by the second quarter and we're just watching commercials. I mean, I don't think we want we don't
2014.
Want to see that. We don't want to see that.
We don't want to see Super Bowl 20 between the Bears and the Patriots. Where
right.
That was
right.
Where the Bears was just way too much for New England. That was a 46-10 defeat. Or, I mean, even recent for our young audience, what year was that? I think it was 14 or 15, that Super Bowl between Denver and Seattle.
Yep.
Where Seattle just completely just blitzed Denver and Peyton Manning. And they had no answer for that. So, I mean, we don't want that. But I think we're going to see a great game. And it's going to probably work in Kansas City's favor. I think that Pat Mahomes will make a play, will make one more play, and he will get a chance to make that play. He'll be the last one to get the ball. I think it's Andy Reid's time. I don't think this is about X's and O's, guys. I think this is about timing. This is Andy Reid's time, and his time is now. What better way to do it? Without Baltimore in your way and without New England in your way. Yes, San Francisco is a tough team. Some would say they've been the best team all year long, but Kansas City has always been in the thick of things, and they got hot at the right time. I like this Kansas City Chiefs 34-30, and they will win the Super Bowl, and Andy Reid will get the Super Bowl championship.
I don't think it's nearly going to be that high scoring. I'm looking at a game somewhere in the high teens, low 20s.
Well, according to the experts that are working at ESPN, they said Shanahan can possibly, that the 49ers could possibly be up 28-3 and blow the game anyway.
And you know what? And I don't think that's going to happen. Because no. if you watch this year's 49ers team, they have been up. And, like, look at last week, for example. They made Green Bay look like they didn't even show up and they weren't even interested to play.
Yeah.
And they never took their foot off the gas. And that was the one problem that eluded Atlanta from their Super Bowl three, four years ago, is that they took their foot off the gas.
Yeah. Well,
and
well, they really
some would argue that they didn't have enough gas in the tank to even last. So, well, you know.
It's interesting with that game. You would think that taking your foot off the gas means you start running the football. But Atlanta started throwing the football. And they couldn't complete them. So it's a weird way to say taking your foot off the gas because everyone says, "What are you doing? Grind the clock, run it." They didn't do it.
Right. And they didn't do it.
So to say they were taking their foot off the gas, So that's kind of an interesting little.
If anything, they kind of sped themselves over the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were some very fast three and outs.
Oh yes.
It really was. It really was very unorthodox for that Atlanta team. That.
You know, if you're getting paid.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check.
Forget that, guys. Forget
Super Bowl.
That. Exactly. So, I mean, here's the thing, as we mentioned, that is the way the Falcons lost that game. They lost it in a way that no one else could possibly have lost it.
Who's getting paid millions of dollars to call games.
Hi, this is John. Sorry I can't get to the phone right at the second. Leave me a message. I'll get right back to you.
All right, I think we have our guest, Mr. John Fricke. Are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for joining us. This is John Morgo and Leon Brown. We are two of the last three guys to do a podcast. Our third member was on the other line, and I think I accidentally deleted him, so I'm going to try to bring him back on while we talk Super Bowl with you. All right, that's him right now. Hold on. Let me get that to you. Daniel, you there? All right. I think this is going to work. Oh, wait a minute. All right. Hello, hello, Daniel. John, Daniel, are you there? John Fricke, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Mr. Fricke, thanks so much for joining us. We're talking Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Niners next week in Miami. Let me just talk to you what we were kind of debating about before you joined us here on the last three guys do a podcast. We were talking about how this could be Kansas City's year of destiny. Andy, it's Andy Reid's turn to kind of hoist that Super Bowl trophy. I'm thinking that San Francisco and Jimmy Garoppolo, this is his really first game on the big stage. Butterflies might be there. If San Francisco is going to win this game, it's going to be their defense that's going to have to hold Kansas City down. And judging from the way they held Green Bay out of it last week, that looks like a pretty good observation. I just wanted to get your opinions as to what we're going to see next week down in Miami.
I think by and large, you know, I'm not a fan of conventional wisdom. And as we have moved along here, the conventional wisdom, you know, it's really started to push towards Kansas City. But this is where I kind of agree with the conventional wisdom. San Francisco certainly has a powerful running game, and they certainly have a really good defensive line. And Garoppolo is not a bad quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's a pretty good quarterback. But I think when you look at these two teams, there is one guy who is dynamic, and that's Mahomes.
Yes.
He is so dynamic that I think he's the best player in the NFL. That's not to say Lamar Jackson didn't deserve the MVP this year, but if I were taking one player first in the NFL right now and drafted from everybody in the league, I'd take Pat Mahomes number one.
Right. Right. Yeah. That. I mean, he's had a good year again. Lamar Jackson probably had the numbers, a very steady year. And you looked at the two games that Patrick Mahomes missed during the season with that kneecap issue. And also that's a very interesting point there, because I don't think anyone expected him to come back so soon and to play at such a high level as he did following that kneecap issue.
Yeah, let's go around the room. I'm curious to what you guys are going to say, what the three of you think.
All right, Leon, I kind of gave you my opinion. Well, let me tell you where I think the game is going to lie. Like I said, I think it's going to be San Francisco's defense. I have it somewhere in the high teens, low 20s in terms for a final score. Daniel, and I'm still not sure if he's there on the other line. Daniel, are you on the other line?
I'm here.
Okay, great. You had it in the low 30s for both teams.
Yes.
And, Leon, what's your opinion?
I believe that the Kansas City Chiefs offense, you know, as high-powered as it is, as well-performing, I mean, we're talking about a well-oiled machine V8 2020 Mustang, will be stalled by the 49ers front four. I believe, and this is based on evidence that I've seen in the past, and one of the most high-powered offenses I've seen perform in a Super Bowl was the Patriots of 2007 that featured Randy Moss and company. And they were stalled by that front four that was the New York Giants. And I believe that we will see that again on this coming Sunday with the 49ers stalling it and the Cincinnati Chiefs. And a shocker, I don't think the Kansas City Chiefs will score more than three touchdowns. I believe that the 49ers will win about 24-17.
So you're about where I am.
Absolutely.
Low 20s, high teens.
Yes.
Yes.
So with me,
you've got more of an offensive-oriented thing.
Yes, I do. And it's simple. The whole thing is the more obvious pick would go with San Francisco, because they have the pedigree. They can run the football and they play great defense. But, and John, I want you to hear me on this one. I think it's time. I think it's Andy Reid's turn. And I think that they're going to play well enough. Mahomes, it's like you said a few minutes ago, that Pat Mahomes is probably the best player in the NFL, and I agree with that.
Right.
And oftentimes the best player in the NFL will make plays, and I think Mahomes can make that play. I think he'll be the one that'll end this game, and I think the Chiefs win 34-30, And why not? I picked Mahomes as my Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, I think I'm taking a little bit of piece of everybody here. I think that, you know, Daniel's right that you have a defense in San Francisco that can shut down a high-powered offense. To me, it's not so much a high-powered offense as it is a quick strike offense. You can shut down Kansas City for 50 of the 60 minutes, but in the 10 minutes you dealt, they're going to score three times.
And exactly.
And that's the thing about it. They're so quick strike. If San Francisco dares make one mistake, if San Francisco, I don't know, you know, you can't predict, you know, turnovers and penalties and the things of that nature, but San Francisco, if Kansas City scores, San Francisco gives them the ball right back, it could be two touchdowns in 45 seconds. And so this is where Kansas City could put them in a box and force Garoppolo to beat them. Not that Garoppolo can't go downfield. You know, certainly George Kittle probably, no, not probably, definitely the best tight end of the game right now. But Travis Kelce might be the best receiving tight end of the game. So, you know, I said that the interesting matchup to me is the tight ends because, you know, the quarterbacks, you know, are what they are, running backs are what they are. But those two tight ends, they're the two best in the game. And so, you know, which one has the bigger game? But, again, Sammy Watkins or, you know, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, special teams. There's so many things, little intangibles that favor Kansas City in the game, not to mention Pat Mahomes that can turn a game. I mean, are you convinced, Daniel, that Mecole Hardman's not taking 103 yards in this game?
I am, and he's actually the guy that if Mahomes don't win the Super Bowl MVP award, I think he will. He's the guy that I would pick other than Mahomes to win this. I think he can take a punt return back for 84 yards and just completely change the game. And like you said, he can take a kick return back 100 yards for a touchdown and change the game. I think that he's one of those dynamic players that every team needs to win it, and he would be the guy that I would definitely choose. Now, going back to your point about the tight ends, John, have you ever seen a Super Bowl matchup with the two best tight ends in football? I can't recall a time where we've had two of the best tight ends in football. We normally talk about the quarterbacks, the running backs, defense, but we never talk about the tight ends. Do you ever remember a time hearing or seeing this?
You know, I'd have to go back to the Patriots, you know, years of Gronk versus somebody, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, was it Shannon Sharp still the Denver's tight end in the Super Bowl against Falcons? I don't know.
Yes, he was.
I can't remember.
Yes, he was. Yeah. He was.
So Sharp versus Gonzalez. I mean, I don't know if they were the two best at the time. They were both trending toward the end of their career. But, I mean, no, I mean, this is – I think what makes this a little bit different is that, to me, I think this is – it's not – the two best players on each team in a matchup are not – our quarterback versus your quarterback. We've had that plenty of times.
Yes.
And it's not our star running back versus your star running back because, no offense to Garoppolo, he's not a star quarterback, and there really isn't a star running back in this game. And so San Francisco has no real star wide receivers. So the real, you know, when you talk about who's a star on which team has, you know, what position does each team have a star on offense, it happens to be tight end. And so that kind of makes it a little bit unique in that regard. And they're kind of different tight ends, but boy, they're both game changers.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yes. Definitely.
And they both seem to be having fun playing the game. Like Kittle, he looks like he's just enjoying himself. And it kind of gets infectious to watch him.
Oh, yeah, George Kittle's phenomenal. I mean, Iowa breeds tight ends like Alabama breeds wide receivers. I mean,
yes.
And George Kittle has become... He's, you know, right now you start looking around the NFL landscape and you say, you know, what, not who's the best, but if you could have one player at certain positions, you know, who would you want? At running back, you would want, and this is no offense to the Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey's of the world, but you might want Derrick Henry. At tight end, you might want, and this is no offense to the great receiving tight ends, George Kittle, just because of how big and tough those guys are.
Yes.
I mean, they're just brutally tough. And Kittle and Derrick Henry are probably the two players I would not want to see in the open field right now.
At all.
No.
Guys, I got a question.
Shoot.
And, you know, I want us to use our minds and a little bit of our hearts in this one. If you're Bill Belichick right now, is your right hand just slapping your forehead right about the middle, like the palm of your right hand just slapping your forehead right now, looking at Robert Kraft like, dude, we should have just Joe Montana this man and sent him somewhere else and we could have just kept rolling?
You know, maybe the bigger question is, if you're Bill Belichick right now, are you sitting around going, who's going to be my quarterback next
year?
That's what I'm saying.
That's the question.
Because, you know,
no question.
Because right now you let Jimmy Garoppolo go, and he's now playing the Super Bowl. potentially win one. And if you're Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, you're pretty much stuck holding the bag because Tom Brady is pretty much on his way out.
The only way you could have kept him was to pull a Rodgers Favre thing where you just shove the superstar out of the way, and created room for the next guy to come in. Like, for example, you could see that, you know, in New Orleans, they really want to go to Teddy Bridgewater. They're going to have to tell Drew, sorry, but we're moving on.
Sort of the way that they
did in Green Bay, and they were nowhere in that position to make that call at that time.
And let's be honest,
they moved away from Brady.
And let's be honest, last year they looked like geniuses with this decision. Garoppolo went to the Niners, Niners floundered, and Tom Brady went to the Super Bowl. So if you want to say for a 1 year rental, last year they looked like geniuses. This year, okay, the tables got turned. And we'll have to see whether or not they make a commitment to build up Tom Brady's wide receiver core, or they're going to take their chances with somebody else next year.
Let's see. They,
yeah, I, you know, I, if I were Robert Kraft and I had the ability to, you know, make a trade, to do something. You know, it's in their nature to do something. You know, big and bold. You know, do they? They don't have a whole lot of assets to trade. I mean, they don't have a second round pick. Falcons have the second round pick, their second round pick. I mean, would they want to trade, you know, future first round picks to make a gigantic step up to try to draft a quarterback? I kind of doubt that. But I can see them going into, if Brady ends up playing for another team, let's say he goes to the Chargers, you know, what do they do? You know, are they going to have to go into free agency then? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, because I don't think that they're going to be one, they're not likely to be one of these teams that wants to say, okay, fine, we'll just tank and try and get Trevor. It's just not in their way of doing things. But the question is, you know, who's a fit there? And that's another story, of course, for the off season. You know, would they go out and get, hell, would they get Drew Brees for a year? I mean, just to, you know, bridge something, or would they go after Teddy Bridgewater? It depends on what the Saints want to do.
Yes.
It depends on what Brees wants to do, given this new story about the Saints with the whole, backing up the Catholic Church of the PR nightmare that's going to be.
Yeah.
They expose themselves and the NFL to litigation here. And Drew Brees may say, you know, I think we're just to get the tip of the iceberg. That story, by the way, guys, that story could be huge.
I think it will be. And you're also forgetting a couple of other quarterbacks, one by the name of Cam Newton. I think this year is going to be the most interesting year in terms of quarterback movement that we've seen in the NFL in quite some time.
Yeah, I think everybody's trying to position themselves, especially when it comes to the draft, too, because there are teams that don't necessarily need quarterbacks that could trade picks, and Detroit being one of them at number three. And so, if Tua is somebody that everybody seems to want to have now, you can see a lot of movement around there, especially, you know, with the teams trying to do that. Yeah, no, and the free agency of quarterbacks is going to be phenomenally interesting. Phillip Rivers is going to play again. I mean, could Rivers and Brady swap teams? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work out. I know that there are at least half a dozen teams right now in the market for free agent quarterbacks, setting aside draft picks.
And also other quarterbacks coming in the draft, Justin Herbert out of Oregon, Jake Fromm, of course, out of Georgia. And again, a lot of names, a lot of people being shuffled around this season. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. Leon Brown, Daniel Baltimore being joined by 92.9 The Game's John Fricke, talking Super Bowl, talking the NFL about everything that's going on with the big game in Miami next week at the great oil derrick in the sky. If you drive by, that's kind of what it looks like. It's very, very interesting game. We think we're going to see a lot of good defense. Tight ends are definitely going to be an issue. Of course, San Francisco's defense, they're going to matter as well. John, what do you think about Kansas City's defense? Where do they have to step up and play well next week?
Well, if I'm the Chiefs, I use Chris Jones to his maximum. I load the box. I put 7-8 in the box, and I dare San Francisco to beat me over the top. I double Kittle, and I go, Garoppolo, hit your wide receivers. If he does, he does. Because it doesn't really hurt Kansas City if San Francisco hits a couple of big plays, because my play into their hands in terms of turning the game into a track meet, because that would be beneficial to Kansas City. They want it to be a track meet. They don't want it to be a slog. This is a case where I think that, you saw what happened with Tennessee, you know, and of course they kind of collapsed too in their own thing. But Kansas City doesn't get fazed by anything. So once it's 24-0, they start slinging it all over the park. And so, San Francisco's a better defensive team. I get that. But at the same time, I think you have to dare Jimmy Garoppolo. All right, Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to beat us. That's the guy that I say, you know, I'll play one-on-one in the outs and double Kittle and put 7-8 in the box and say we're going to do our best to take your running game away.
Yeah, I think Tennessee last week just kind of ran out of gas after their two incredible road wins, asking them to do it for a third time. I think it was just too much to ask, and that's why it's very difficult, not impossible, just very difficult for a sixth seed to ride that momentum train all the way to the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, I think it is. I think Ryan Tannehill.
Play great. I mean, you knock off New England and Baltimore, you're up 17-7 on the road in Kansas City. It would have been an amazing story. But they just sort of, I think, ran out of gas. That's another guy that's going to be interesting in the offseason. What does happen to Derrick Henry? I don't know. Where does he end up?
Yeah, Leon is suggesting that Mr. Henry take a page from Ezekiel Elliott, go down to Cabo and do some training there and wait until he gets a phone call from the Tennessee front office.
Yeah, okay, fine. Just don't go to New Orleans and stand on top of a building in Mardi Gras.
Exactly.
Leon, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I think in that particular AFC Championship game, you know, that game was not just about Derrick Henry, who, you know, he rushed the ball for 19 times and everything for just 69 yards. But, you know, they needed a little more help over the top of their quarterback play. I think Ryan Tannehill, you know, he kind of, you know, I think Ryan Tannehill kind of came up short in them. I think, you know, their offense kind of, you know, it was seen as just being one-dimensional, Derrick Henry a bust, and that can work in college. But we haven't seen just 30 rusher. Like, you know, that might work in the first two games of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But when you're rushing the ball 30 times a game, it's going to be a matter of time as you go deeper into the playoffs and teams get more, you know, adapt to what you're doing, that you're going to have to, you know, differentiate. You have to make your offense a little more versatile.
I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, again, yeah, you saw Kansas City make the conscious effort, I don't know why they didn't from the beginning of the game, but they played him pretty straight at the beginning of the game, and then they decided, okay, we got to load the box against this guy and bring our linebackers up and tell Tannehill, you have to beat us over the top. And, of course, he couldn't do that. That's the same way you got to play this against San Francisco. This is why George Kittle becomes – you know, if George Kittle catches 14 passes, I mean, for 132 yards and three scores, I'm not going to be surprised, because he's going to be the guy that Garoppolo looks to almost all the time.
Right. Again, we're talking with John Fricke from 92.9 The Game. And, John, I know I've really enjoyed this conversation, but we're getting close to the end of our time with you. But I want to ask you one little thing. 92.9 is, of course, the flagship for the Atlanta Falcons radio network. You and your co-host, Hugh Douglas, spend a lot of time up in Flowery Branch talking to the Falcons administrators, talking to the team, the coaches. What is your sense of what the Falcons are going to do in terms of the draft? We know they're going to sit out quarterback. We know they're going to sit out the wide receiver stakes. They might be in the market for a running back. And again, it just seems like going into the draft, it's the same thing. We've heard this countless last couple of years. It's the offensive line. It's the defensive line. Is that what the Falcons brain trust is looking at heading into the draft in Las Vegas? And also, will you go to Vegas to cover the draft for the 492.9?
Nice try. I wish. I think this is going to hinge on something. It's going to hinge on how far Derrick Brown falls. If Derrick Brown falls to like 12, I could see the Falcons trying to make a move up. And so that would be like taking your 16th pick and maybe your first pick of the second round, which is like 47, I believe, and moving up four spots to take Derrick Brown. If he goes early, because I think that would be the one guy along the defensive line that they would covet. But if he goes earlier than that and they can't move up, let's just say they stand pat, I think they're inclined to take the best defensive player on the board, and that could be a safety, by the way. It could be Grant Delpit. And I think that in the second round, one of the two picks in the second round is going to be a running back. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you could see them go after, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or they could go after J.K. Dobbins. I think that a running back is going to be one of the two picks in the second round. I think they're going to be moving on from Devontae, and right now that's something that they really need to have as a guy that can be a game-changing running back for them, because they don't really have it. I mean, Devontae's done a great job, but, you know, he's at the end of his career, and the other guys are nice. They're serviceable. I really like Allison as a short yardage back. I don't dislike Brian Hill, but they're not they're not game-changing backs. And so I think this is the time, and they realize that they need to get a running back who can catch the ball out of the backfield and really do it. And you look at Dobbins and you look at Edwards-Helaire, they're not only quick running backs who can get stuff out in space, but they can catch the ball. So I think that those two guys are the guys I would look at in the second round in terms of that. And so, I think the Falcons are kind of in a position in their first pick to take the best player available, whether it's a defensive end, if it's A.J. Epinesa out of Iowa, who I really like, if it's a safety like Delpit, if it's a linebacker like Isaiah Simmons. It depends on, who the best player available is, because they have needs in all of these spots here. So I think that you'll see that. I think they'll go defense in the first round. I think they'll go defense again in the second round, and the offensive pick in the second round will be for a running back. That's just my guess.
All right, well, we'll see if you're right. And before you go, one last thing. I'd just like to point out, John, that my parents live in the Las Vegas area. I go out there regularly to visit. In fact, I'm going out in about 2 weeks, so I just want to toss that out there for whenever, if you ever need anyone to go out to Vegas and cover anything, I have free room.
Oh, I thought you were inviting me. You were
I have free room and board everywhere, all the time, all the time.
No, I appreciate that, but usually when I'm in Vegas, I kind of want to be, in a hotel.
Okay, no problem, John. Thank you. John Fricke, thank you so much for joining us here on The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Really enjoyed you.
Well,
hope
I wish
to have
you guys the
soon.
Best of luck. Yep, absolutely.
Thank you so much, John.
All right, John. You have a good one.
You have a good one.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that was John Fricke from 92. 92- what the Atlanta Falcons' mindset might be heading into the NFL draft coming up at the end of April at the Bellagio. Well, actually, it's going to take place on a lot of different settings. But this is what they're going to do is, and this is very interesting, they're using the fountains of the Bellagio. They're going to turn the fountains down and use that lake. They're going to build a temporary stage in the middle of the lake and ferry the draft choices across the lake to that stage. It's going to be very interesting, but a person on Twitter, and I cannot remember the name, says, maybe it's not a good idea for these players to be ferried over water to meet their new owners. Maybe that's not the best message that's being sent out. But I kind of have to agree with that. Without a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of get it.
We're really trying to come up with a novel way to do this, but maybe that's not exactly the best in terms of subtext. You might want to come up with something a little better than that. I get where you're going. It's novel. You're going in with the Vegas glitz, but maybe this isn't a good idea.
But
still, they're trying in for. You got to give them. Got to give them points for creativity, with that one. Again, there's just a lot of other, and this is kind of interesting, guys, because the last couple of days we had a lot of really random things that have happened, and I don't mean random in terms of crazy. I mean interesting, and I want to like. Usually, we would have 60 seconds at the end of the podcast to talk about these kind of things, but I've got just so many of them that I want to bring these up and talk about them just a little bit. First of all, I want to talk about in the WNBA. I found this very interesting. Maya Moore, who is a came from Collins Hill, very good player, won four state titles at Collins Hill under head coach Angie Hembry. Player in the WNBA, she is taking off a year. She's not going to play next year, not because of injury, but she's campaigning for prison reform. Specifically, she's championed the cause of an inmate, I believe in Illinois, whom she believes was unjustly incarcerated and is just going to work to basically prove his innocence. And I think that's interesting that these kind of players are they're really using their platform to kind of speak up in terms of social causes that they believe in. And, of course, Kaepernick may have started all this. But this is a very interesting because Maya is, in a sense, she's not being kicked off her team for this. She's doing this because she wants to.
and that's a good. It's good for her. You know, it's a lot going on out here. You know, that's even within. You know, matter of fact, there's a show that 50 Cent is executive producing.
Right.
That goes to your point, John.
Missouri. It's in Missouri is where this person's located. Is where this person is incarcerated, not Illinois.
Yes, and there's a show that Curtis 50 Cent Jackson is producing. I believe it's going to be on one of the major networks.
I think it's CBS.
Maybe. Yeah, I believe so. CBS. Either CBS or ABC. I think it's ABC because I was watching the game last night. When I was watching the Laker game last night on ABC.
Okay, maybe it is ABC.
They advertise it on ABC. So I'm not saying
it's ABC. Probably is then.
One of the two. Yeah. One of the two. But it's a lot of that going on. Also, you know, not sports related, but along the same, you know, to your point about prison reform, Jay-Z and Yo Gotti, the two more popular hip-hop rappers, are suing a prison in Mississippi for inmate abuse.
Okay.
You know, that pretty much it's being argued that the prison is being ran like a World War II concentration camp in which the prisoners are, you know, pretty much, you know, being forced to live in, you know, inhumane circumstances. I mean, right. You know, granted, they're prisoners, but at the same time, they should be afforded their constitutional rights. And they're clearly being violated. You have prisoners allegedly being shot and killed by the guards. I mean, it's ridiculous. So kudos to Maya Moore for looking past the fame and the wealth and, you know, taking up social cause. And another thing, you know, what if this situation with the New Orleans Saints gets so – what if it gets so inflated?
Well, again, as Mr. Fricke intimated, New Orleans Saints was giving the Catholic Church advice on how to hide their emails, basically how to stonewall the investigation into clergy sexual abuse of minors.
So the Saints did this. You said the Saints.
The Saints owner.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Was it the owner? Gail Benson.
Gail Benson.
I thought it was the organization.
Yeah, I thought. I thought it was the organization of some sort. Like
the, yeah, it could have been the owner, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I believe it was Gail Benson, who was giving millions of dollars to the Catholic institution in New York, who I believe is the owner of the New Orleans Saints.
The Benson family.
Yes, Gail Benson. Who's being seen? The Archdiocese of New Orleans is a regular at the New Orleans Saints games. Gail Benson has given millions of dollars to the Catholic Church of New Orleans, and allegedly has been sending emails on how to pretty much, you know, acting kind of sort of, you know, giving them advice on how to, and what John said, stonewall these claims. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. You know,
that's not good.
That's very well could be you could be labeled as an accomplice to child rape.
Exactly. But my point is, this is a criminal matter. If it is true that Gail Benson is involved in kind of advising, first of all right, it could be an accomplice.
Absolutely.
It could be that, but I don't see, first of all, what can Roger Goodell do? I guess he could fine them. He could cost them draft picks. And that's pretty much it.
That's up to the owners.
Yeah,
because
that's
at the same
time,
you know, because you got to look at it like this. You know, this does stain the brand of the NFL. This puts a dent in the shield.
Right. And that's the last thing Goodell wants after everything else that's been going on with Kraft and getting caught up in that child's pornography ring.
Jim Irsay.
Irsay.
With the drug thing, you have Jerry Jones with the rape accusation of a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I mean, the Shield has – but they were kind of – the Robert Kraft thing, they kind of made that go away because we haven't heard anything within the main outlets.
It's still being litigated, I think.
Right.
It's still being litigated. But you're right. It has been – he's not going to be charged.
Right. So, you know, they kind of gave – you know, Jim Irsay a slap on the wrist for the drugs. You know, I guess he had a prescription drug habit that had him step down from his responsibilities with the Indianapolis Colts. Mm-hmm. But this is a whole nother animal, though, because
right.
She's actually good friends with Gregory Armand, who's the New Orleans Archbishop, whose name is being implicated in this whole situation.
Right.
And they have a lot of emails in which she's pretty much with Gail Benson, who has intimate knowledge of these child rapings that's been going on with the New Orleans Archdiocese, and not just having knowledge, but then telling them on how to cover it up.
Right.
That is not, if once this reaches the news, politics demands that something be done. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but like I said, if you're the NFL, what can you do?
Yeah.
The only remedy they have is what I've said, fines or draft picks.
But ultimately, it's the public. Just like when the situation came out with the baseball scandal.
Right.
You know, with, you know, the Astros.
Right.
They were really concerned. You know, same thing with the Vic, with the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are really concerned on the public backlash. Well, it all depends on public backlash. If the public sees this as being the crime that it is, child rape.
And it's not the public in general. It's the public in New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely. Them
right.
too. You know,
if the people in New Orleans decide, okay, we're not going to go to the Saints game anymore,
they're going to have to do something, because that's going to affect everybody's bottom. Because they're worried about the owners. Worried about what?
Bottom line.
That's it.
Right.
Profit margin.
So Gail Benson's going to have to. Will it get to the point where Gail Benson's going to have to sell? And if she does have to sell, who will she sell it to? Will that person that she sells it to commit to keeping the franchise in New Orleans? Because let's be honest, New Orleans is not the biggest market to have an NFL team.
But it's pretty stable.
It's stable, yes. But there are markets bigger that are clamoring for an NFL team.
Because we've seen the same. Who's the Clippers owner that had to sell the Clippers?
Donald Sterling.
When his scandal, I mean to cut you off, Daniel. Sorry about that. When Donald Sterling's scandal went public with V. Steviano,
mm-hmm.
he had to sell within a year.
Right.
And I don't think that. I mean, granted, what Donald Sterling said was very incendiary, and he should have been having to sell. But I believe this right here
is more.
It's a little worse.
Yeah, it is a little worse. It is a little bit. And also, the NBA, their owners are a lot more. Presenting more of a united front than the NFL. I think all the owners got together and said, "Don, you got to go."
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I think they did say that.
Especially with
the NBA and, for lack of a better word, hip hop being so joined together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't a good look for them. And then that's so the owners came together, called Don up, and said, "Don, you got to go."
And this happened with the Atlanta Hawks as well, too. I think some racist emails were serviced to the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, the Hawks are a different kettle of fish simply because it was so unwieldy, their ownership structure, you just knew it was going to collapse.
Right.
We had like 10 different people, each with equal power. And you just knew that somebody was going to it was like Highlander. You know, thou shalt be out. I can't do my Sean Connery.
Oh, man. You're talking about when Sean Connery played the Spanish guy.
There shall only be one.
That part.
You know, yeah. One shall be left. You know, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the Hawks was just, that was doomed to failure from the get-go. And it was just, they used these racist emails to kind of, push the process along a little bit.
What'd you guys say, Daniel, on this one? You mean to cut you off, brother?
Daniel.
Say that again? I'm sorry.
Well, Leon thought he cut you off, so he just wants you to jump back in with your point.
Oh, no. Actually, you guys have been really hitting on points, but I do want to make a point about the Saints and selling the team. They'll never do that. Selling the Saints is almost equivalent to the Saints getting to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
leaving in the NBA. That was a huge uproar. That'll be even worse if New Orleans was to leave New Orleans. That fan base, you wouldn't want to hear about that for a long time. But you know what? It's funny too. I'm going to add this one small thing. Oftentimes, players, coaches, athletes from every sport is told to quote unquote stay in their lane, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Which is the biggest contradiction.
Well, it's basically
this is the reason why it's the biggest contradiction. Simply because you have Maya Moore, who is doing a great deed that has nothing to do with her sport, but she's doing a great deed. She has taken time off for prison reform.
Right.
But meanwhile, you got the Saints who are trying to give advice to someone about that whole thing,
right.
That whole story.
Right.
And so the Saints need to stay in their lane. That's why that the stay in your lane thing is like a huge contradiction when it comes to athletes.
Well, it's a big contradiction. Well, when people say stay in your lane, what they're really saying is stop telling me things I don't want to hear.
That too.
That's what it is.
That too. But then when you say something that you want to hear and it's correct or it's incorrect, that's when it becomes the contradiction.
Right.
Because it can be an and or.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're reportedly they're protecting a soon to be convicted child rapist by the name of George F. Brignac, who he's right now facing a rape charge of a child that he raped during the late 1970s, and the boy whose name has not been released. Well, he's a grown man now. He's a grown man now, of course,
right.
Early 70s.
Right.
But from age 7 to 11, and the most disgusting thing about it is that the Catholic Church Archdiocese knew about this and allowed him to have access to school. So this happened back in the 70s.
Right, and again, it was a different time back in the 70s.
Right. He was actually allowed to be around school children up until 2018.
Well, what the Catholic Church had done, again, this is kind of a separate thing, is instead of confronting the problem head on, they thought, okay, this is going to be such a negative black mark against us. What we need to do is we need to shuttle this guy to another parish where he does the same thing over again. Really, what this guy needs to be done is shuttled off to jail or shuttled off to a position where he's not in contact with underage children and to do it in a way where no one finds out about it. And that's what rather than confront the issue head on and deal with the fallout, whatever it may be, the Catholic Church decided to just sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away by itself. And as we all know, that's not going to happen. And what people have yet to realize, what people have yet to learn, is that it's kind of like it's like a Band-Aid or a pimple. Sometimes you just got to pop that thing, rip it off no matter how much it hurts, and just deal with it now rather than let it fester, let it go, because the cover-up is always going to be worse than just admitting, okay, we bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's always – the people just have not, no matter how many lessons we see about this, people in authority just cannot get the lesson.
Yeah.
That the cover-up is worse and it's always going to come out. And that's why people, you know, that's why there are journalists. That's why there are these type of people who are committed to bring the truth out, because that's their job. Because that's the job of journalism. That's why journalists and the free press are enshrined in our Constitution on the First Amendment, because a journalist, his or her whole job in life is to tell people things they don't want to hear. If you want to tell people things they want to hear, that's not journalism, that's public relations. And like I said, people just don't seem to understand that, or more accurately, they are so convinced they're right, and that if you tell them that, instead of saying, oh my gosh, I'm wrong, no, that's not the case. I cannot be wrong. There's no way I can be wrong. You have to be wrong. You are either stupid / evil for telling me that I'm wrong. It's just a matter of trying to establish reality on something.
And we see this also, you know, not just high-ranking NFL officials and ownership, but even down to the players.
Mm-hmm.
We have Mr. Antonio Brown, who has stumbled his way in front of a judge.
And not only that, not so much a judge, but he wore a suicide vest.
Oh, man. I just thought that, you know, maybe he was just trying to get out of Oakland. You know, maybe he was trying to get out of Pittsburgh. You know, this man is trying to get out of freedom now. You know, it's to the point now where the judge – he has somehow, I mean, we've been telling this man, all three of us, including others within the media and others within just the population of America,
right,
has been telling this individual, young, I ain't going to call him young man. He's a grown man, brother.
Get your head on straight.
Stay out the way. He had to stay out the way. Mm-hmm. All he had to do was show up the work and could have been got millions of dollars 30 times over again. Go ahead, Daniel.
And you know what? I was talking, and I've talked to several people. I was talking to one coworker, and she actually may fill in for me one of these weeks.
Okay.
And I'll let you know more about her. She asked me, because I'm her client. I do IT work for her. No, she's my client. Excuse me. I do IT work for her. And the first thing she asked me about was, what's going on with your boy Antonio Brown? And there's been several whispers. And now that you think about it, a lot of people are thinking that he may be suffering from CTE.
Well,
like a lot of people are thinking that.
Okay, maybe.
Now, but of course, we won't know that.
Until
we don't know that.
Yeah, they
until,
have to,
you know.
They have to remove his brain in order
exactly.
to figure that out. And I'm sure people are going to say, well, how many concussions has this man suffered over the course of his career?
You know,
right. Well, you know, remember he had that big hit where he was, looked like he, it didn't look good. It didn't look great, that big hit that he had a couple of years ago.
We're talking about a gentleman who has a blonde mustache. You know, in his, when you have people like that, you know, we're talking about like the Dennis Rodman-ish types. You know, who's we have, I'm talking about egos as big as the White House. You know, in his mind, he could do no wrong.
Right.
For example, when he was accused of, you know, the sexual improprieties with his trainer, he was told just to lay back and let litigation take its course. We don't think you did it, but just chill out. Just go to work and do your job. He couldn't do that.
Right.
He went off and, you know, harassed the woman. And which, you know, it probably won't lead to his conviction, but it led to him. It led to his dismissal from the team.
Yes.
So then people are like, you know what? That wasn't a good look. But, you know, you just lay low for the year and, you know, we might be able to squeeze you in for the playoffs. He shows up with a whole entourage. He did great at the workout with the New Orleans Saints, but showed with an entourage. They told him, don't do it.
Yeah.
So then they like, you know what? We didn't like that. The commissioner's not going to go for that. Sorry. Because I think Goodell would have let him in. The Saints are playing chess.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is a multi-million-dollar – this is a billion-dollar company. They don't play checkers.
Yes.
You know, I'm pretty sure that they went off and like, you know, if he has a good workout, we'll let him in. But then this man showed with the entourage. Oh, he's going to be a problem. Don't let him in. Then he goes off and he's told us, lay low, relax.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to schedule a boxing match for everybody to watch with a YouTube boxing sensation that could lead to me getting pummeled. Oh, my God. Now he's insulting members of the media, and now this has happened. He wound up in front of a judge. Go ahead, John.
Can we blame CTE for making – see, I think this is where we're going. We're blaming CTE for players making really bad decisions. And look at Aaron Hernandez.
Well,
and look at Aaron Hernandez, who basically, you know, killed a couple.
Yeah, have y'all seen that?
Who killed a couple?
Have y'all seen
that
Netflix special?
I have not seen the Netflix documentary.
I have to watch that, man.
It intimates
that is a deep documentary.
Yeah. It kind of intimated that. But look, Aaron Hernandez was, you know, he was doing this kind of stuff in college. I mean, at what point do we just blame CTE for? It's not a get out of jail free card.
Exactly. You cannot be youth.
Yeah, it's not.
No.
Youth does not excuse everything.
Right.
Let's be honest here. Sometimes people have, you know, to Daniel's point, Aaron Hernandez, you know, he was more than likely dealing with, when you're dealing with people who have been molested as children, which Aaron Hernandez more than likely was, that creates, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It creates sociopaths,
right?
Sociopathic people.
Sociopaths.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the ultimate side effect of child molestation. It creates sociopaths.
But at the end of the day, no matter what turned you into this person, you are still responsible
absolutely.
For your own
that's true.
Actions. You cannot use that as a get out of free as a jail. At the end of the day,
spot on.
You cannot use this as a get out of jail free card.
Spot on, John. And exactly. and that's the difference. You know, if everybody went to court, everybody is a walking motion picture. We all are. We all have stories of tragic triumph and everything like that.
And that's just human nature. The human nature I will posit to you right now, human nature is the desire to be, to portray yourself and to be seen as the hero of your own story.
Absolutely.
That's human nature.
In a nutshell. And the difference is what determines what, you know, the outcome of the judge when he hits that gravel against the hardwood, mm-hmm. is how did you react to what happened to you?
Right.
What was your reaction? Your reaction would determine how long you're if you walk out, mm-hmm. or if you have to stay for a few summers.
Yeah. Do you just let it go, let it roll off, or do you use it to portray yourself as a victim and to try and get this to excuse acting like a sociopathic lunatic?
Right.
You know, that's just our opinion. Boy, we are going way far afield here on some social issues.
It was heavy
issues.
Today.
We are going some way far afield here on some social issues on the Last Two Guys Do a Podcast. Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown, John Morgo. We're going to turn it over to our other panelists in a moment. I just want to mention before we go that, before I turn over to Daniel and Leon, other things that I wanted to talk about. Another one I wanted to give the eulogy to one Buddy Nobles, head coach of Irwin County in Georgia.
Irwin County.
And he passed away this week, and what an uplifting story for him. He was diagnosed with stomach cancer, battled stomach cancer while his team was playing. They kind of set himself up with a coaching box in the press area. His team went to the state titles, defeated
he's actually on the sideline. Yeah, they set up a table for him on like the sideline.
Yeah.
Sideline.
Yeah. He led Irwin County to the first Super Bowl, to their first GHSA championship since 1975. They were the runner up last year, defeated, I believe, Marion County, I think is who they beat in the Class A finals. But boy, what a story for them. Very inspirational, rallied the community around him, and there was just no, going into the playoffs, there was just no way that Irwin County was going to lose this matchup, this championship. And he finally succumbed to stage 4 cancer a few weeks ago, and I think he was about 7 months since it was diagnosed. And I want to give our condolences to everyone at Irwin County, but boy, this is a man who definitely came out ahead on cancer. He definitely went a winner, and there's a photo of him on his couch just cradling that championship trophy like it was the most important thing in the world to him, and it was just a testament of the community rallying behind, and it's truly a great inspirational story. It's just a shame that that is how it met its proverbial end. All right, who's next?
I'm going to go lighter. Mine's going to be light. Last night, we seen a very prominent Los Angeles Laker, LeBron James, surpass another prominent legendary Laker in Kobe Bryant in his points totals. I was watching, Skip and Shannon, one of my favorite shows, you know. And Shannon kind of took a cheap shot at Kobe Bryant a little bit, stating that LeBron James, you know, passed Kobe. It took him, I believe, what it was equivalent to 87 or so fewer games to get there than Kobe did, to surpass him. And I like to say this, you know, as for those who may not have heard the show, I'm a Laker fan.
Yeah, well, no, keep going, Leon, because something has just come across my Twitter feed that if it's true, it just changes everything.
Really?
Yeah. Right now, let's see. This is just breaking news that's come into my Twitter feed. I just hope TMZ is reporting something. That Kobe Bryant has, and I really hope this is an internet hoax. I hope so, because if it is, first of all, someone has got a very sick sense of humor if this is an internet hoax. But TMZ is reporting and confirmed that Kobe Bryant has passed away in a helicopter crash in Calabasas. He used to travel by helicopter for years. Cause of the crash is under investigation. Traveling with 3 people when it went down. Mercy personnel responded. Nobody on board survived. five are dead. Again, this is according to TMZ. I really, really hope that this is, in fact, an internet hoax. Because this...
Yeah, I do, too. I just saw it come across my Facebook.
Because this is just... Yeah. I'm looking over. I just went on the CNN website, and they don't have it. They just have a fourth case of the coronavirus has been acknowledged, confirmed. But wow, I really hope that this is an internet hoax, that this is not right. And if it is, because right now TMZ is an exclusive, hopefully this is still, wow. Okay. So if that is true, and again, TMZ, whew. All right. So I just hope that is the case, because so this will really put its world shake the world off.
Yeah, I think it is a hoax.
I hope so too.
Because I'm not seeing anything else reporting. They would have reported that like right away.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the Pro Bowl. I'm about to already watch the Pro Bowl, so that nothing has been flashed across yet. So hopefully it is a hoax. And if it is, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it is.
All right. This is nothing to play about.
No, this is nothing. You know? If this is, then somebody's got a sick sense of humor.
Right.
And I'm sure we'll be, somebody will get confirmation of that in the next 10, 15 minutes about that. So.
Yeah, because it's only.
TMZ is the only source that has this.
Yeah, that's reporting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, people were, you know, and watching Skip and Shannon, you know.
Okay, there is a tweet from L.A. County Sheriff's. Five people confirmed deceased, no survivors in Calabasas in helicopter crash. Malibu deputies remain with L.A. County Fire personnel. Investigation ongoing. So maybe the crash did happen, and I just hope Kobe was not on the helicopter. I think that, so right. We know there is a crash, but we don't know if Kobe was in fact on it, and I'm sure that's going to be a developing story throughout the next couple of hours.
Yeah, let's hope not. That was like my favorite basketball player between him and Sean Kemp. I mean, that'd be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a cheap shot taken at Kobe by Shannon Sharp on Skip and Shannon, in which he stated that LeBron James was able to surpass Kobe Bryant's record in 87 fewer games. And granted that LeBron James did pass Kobe Bryant 87 fewer games, but circumstances have to be taken into account. For one, when Kobe Bryant was drafted in 1996 to the Lakers were a contender.
Mm-hmm.
The Jerry West, who was then the GM of the Lakers, traded Vlade Divac, who was a very major contributing piece to the Lakers' success.
Yes.
During the early 90s.
Yes.
In exchange for the young kid who was drafted out of Lord Marion High School in Philadelphia. Because that young kid who is Kobe Bryant was expected to make a significant contribution to the Lakers' potential title run.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, a lot of the accolades, such as rookie of the years and scoring accolades and everything like that, that Kobe would accomplish while playing for a non-contender like the Charlotte Hornets that he would have got drafted to, he wasn't able to get accomplished.
Right.
And during that rookie game, during the 1997 rookie game, if people were to go back and watch that, Kobe Bryant set the rookie game record by scoring 31 points on the likes of Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, and a lot of other notable rookies and future Hall of Famers. In which, if you watch the game at the 52-minute mark, they put the camera on the east bench, mm-hmm. and they had to cut to a commercial early because Al Iverson was sitting on the bench cussing up a storm, mad at his team that Kobe Bryant, a 18-year-old, 13th pick, was showing him up.
Right.
So I say this, that granted LeBron James surpassed Kobe in 87 fewer games, which kudos to LeBron James. But at the same time, LeBron James, like Al Iverson, like Ray Allen, like a lot of other rookies that are high draft picks, was drafted to a non-contender and was able to go off and start and pretty much mature during his rookie and sophomore campaigns that led to him, you know, surpassing Kobe at this point. Because you look at the Kobe, you know, when Kobe came of age, Eddie Jones was traded to the Heat, and he pretty much, you know, he was able to get a lot, the bulk of his scoring done within like 15 years. Because granted, the last 2 years of his illustrious career was kind of riddled with injury.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, not to take anything away from LeBron James, because by default, I'm a LeBron James fan because he is on my team.
Exactly.
So kudos to LeBron James, but I just like to keep everything in perspective. And the word, in the words of the immortal Roy Jones, y'all must have forgot. And if you don't know about Kobe, just ask somebody, and we'll be sure to inform you.
All right. Hopefully, like I said, we really hope that this is not true. But if it is, you know, we are going to have to really, the eulogies are going to be outpouring because Kobe Bryant, the NBA wouldn't be what it is today without Kobe Bryant. The Lakers wouldn't be without they were. His influence on the game is unparalleled. And like I said, we really hope this isn't true. And, I'm sure we'll get more information as the days and hours come about. All right, Daniel, we kind of ignored you. What do you have for us?
Real quick, I was disturbed by something that happened Tuesday night in the world of college basketball. So there was a brawl that broke out at the end of the Kansas-Kansas State game. How did this brawl break out? So Kansas is destroying Kansas State. This is like the final seconds of the ball game. A Kansas State player steals the ball, and Silvio DeSosa goes down. I think it was him that went down and rejected his layup. And a fight breaks out.
Yep.
And it was one of the most horrific scenes I had seen amongst college basketball players. Now, Bill Self and Bruce Weber both were very apologetic. They were both embarrassed, and rightfully so, because this isn't right. This is not what college basketball coaches or even high school basketball coaches teach you. Listen, while I do respect that the game is still being played, right? Like, we're still competing. Obviously, the Kansas State player and Kansas State, they're mean. They're upset. They're angry because their rival beat them the way that they beat them, right? So that's understood. So he steals the ball, but then you go down and then you block. And then you block the shot, you know, and then you stand over him or whatever. But I think the most troubling thing that I saw out of this was Silvio DeSosa, who is actually Kansas' best player.
Right.
Some people will say it's Azubuike. Azubuike makes that team roll. They're not a Final Four contender without Azubuike, and we saw that last year. But Savage Silvio DeSosa is going to be a big time thing. He picked up a chair.
Yeah, I saw that. It was a stool. It was a stool. He holds it over
a stool.
He holds it over his head.
And holds it over his head. And he looks like he's about to get ready to throw it. Luckily, somebody.
You are not in the Royal Rumble.
This isn't exactly.
This isn't Royal Rumble.
I don't get this. The thing that puzzles me about this is that this happened in the final seconds of the game. A pointless thing to do. A very senseless act for each team.
Right.
For each team that was involved in that brawl. DeSosa got 12 games. He's been suspended. Other players involved. Kansas State, James Love, he was suspended 8 games. Antonio Gordon was suspended 3. David McCormick suspended 2 games. Go ahead, John.
No, 12 games. That's like the end. That sees out the rest of the regular season.
That's the Big 12.
Yeah.
That's the Big 12.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're gone. You're done.
That's the Big 12.
You're done.
You're done.
And he's probably, and if they make the tournament, he's probably done for the tournament as well. His season's over. And it should be.
Right.
Fortunately, he didn't do anything with the stool. I think he kind of thought better of it. I mean, he didn't throw it at anybody. I think he put it, he didn't throw it at anybody. I'm not sure what he did with it. I think he just put it down. But the very act that he got so caught up in it that he was going to do something, that was pretty much what did it.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, this has been a kind of a downer for the last 20 minutes here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast with this breaking news on Kobe Bryant. Again, TMZ reporting that Kobe Bryant was a passenger in a helicopter crash that occurred in Calabasas, California, which is a little inland in terms of Malibu. If you know Los Angeles, you know Malibu's on the beach. Then there's a mountain range right behind it, and that's where Calabasas is located. I've got a good friend who lives in Calabasas, California, and helicopter crash went down. That's what the LA County Sheriff's is reporting. Five people have died, and TMZ is reporting that one of them is Laker legend Kobe Bryant, who just yesterday was passed in the number three NBA scoring total by LeBron James, a tragic circumstance under any condition, because Kobe Bryant, among what things that he was doing in terms after his retirement from the Lakers, was growing women's basketball, showing it, you know, he's got a daughter, and we've seen a lot of video of him kind of explaining the game while they're courtside for WNBA games. So it is a tremendous loss, and right now nothing is counteracting what we're reporting. You know, Kobe's not stepping out saying, hey, I'm okay, you know. You would think that his Twitter feed is being blown up with the fact that of his reported passing, and he would respond to this if he were still with us. But right now, that's the only thing that we can take away from that. So we're going to be ending this podcast. We'll be back with you next week. We'll be at Daniel Bolton's place for his Super Bowl party, and that's where we'll be recording. We'll be having a live video stream on our YouTube channel, and you'll have all the information on that. I'd like to thank John Fricke for joining us. And right after John left us came this news about Kobe Bryant. So it would be interesting if that had broke while we were on the air with Mr. Fricke. And I want to thank him again for joining us. So we'll be with you in seven more days to talk Super Bowl and to talk more about Kobe Bryant's legacy and what he means to the NBA as a whole. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. Appreciate all your support. You can contact me at John_Morgo on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Leave comments on SoundCloud or on radio.com or on my website at johnmorgo.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a good afternoon.